Penguin Random House Audio presents The Christmas Countdown by Holly Cassidy. Read for you by Amy Hall. With the acknowledgments and a conversation with Holly Cassidy read by the author.
In loving memory of Chloe, to have known you is a gift. And for Jason, Tanya, and Melody, with the gentlest of hugs.
Not till we are lost, in other words, not till we have lost the world, do we begin to find ourselves. Henry David Thoreau. Chapter 1. Saturday, December 1st. Bright stars twinkled in the cloudless sky above, making me instinctively tuck my chin deep into the soft woolen folds of my scarf. I eased my Ford Fiesta into the parking spot behind the three-story red brick Victorian where I lived with my sister and cut the engine, looking forward to getting back upstairs. I'd only left my snuggly cocoon an hour ago to pick up takeout and groceries, and although it was a quick drive from the store to our place off Bloomfield Avenue in the center of Fallbrook, my fingers had gone numb from the cold. Having arrived in town at the end of March this year, I wasn't quite accustomed to the freeze-your-buns-off winter temperatures in upstate New York. If this Saturday, the first day of December, was anything to go by, it would soon feel like I'd chosen to relocate my life to a freezer. Earlier today, my sister had reminded me she was going out for dinner this evening. I'd already decided that once she'd left, I'd head to my cozy bedroom with its teal feature wall and floating shelf, filled with my trio of vibrant green succulents and leafy two-tone pothos. I'd get comfy, listen to my latest chill-out playlist, and continue working on my 3D jigsaw puzzle of the RMS Titanic, a Valentine's Day gift from my now ex-boyfriend Oliver, which I hadn't been able to bring myself to touch for months. More recent hindsight had made me wonder if the replica of the ill-fated ship had been a subliminal message on his behalf, considering how our relationship had hit its own proverbial iceberg not long after. We'd been a couple for a decade, ever since I was in 11th grade and Oliver in 12th. Both of us had grown up in Pineville, Virginia, a quaint little sleeper town an eight-hour drive away, and we'd moved to Fallbrook together following his promotion and transfer to the city. Fallbrook was a pretty place, with a population of around 50,000, and a cool vibe coming from the vast number of students at the local college. I'd loved my new home, had arrived full of excitement and high hopes, with big dreams for our future, ready to continue building our life together. Getting a job at the same company where Oliver worked had seemed like a fantastic idea, too. But 4 weeks later, my world had imploded when I was gently but unequivocally dumped. Oliver had sat me down in our newly rented apartment one evening and calmly confessed he'd slowly but surely fallen out of love with me over the past year. "Why did you want me to come to Fallbrook with you?" I'd sobbed, as he'd whipped out a strategically placed box of tissues from underneath the sofa. "I quit my job. I moved my life for us, for the future we'd always talked about since we were kids."
"I thought the change would help," he said. "I'm sorry, Kelly. Really, I am. I was hoping I'd feel differently here. But I don't. Please believe me when I say I never meant to hurt you."
I thought he'd change his mind, hoped this was a blip and nothing more. But the next blow was him saying he had feelings for someone else. He'd assured me nothing had happened between them, yet. And the implication of that last word had felt like 100 shards of glass ripping through my heart. Thankfully, my sister had already lived in town for a few years, having attended university here and snagging a great local job a week after graduation. When I'd called Anita, she'd not only offered me her spare bedroom, but also both shoulders to cry on. I didn't need to rely on her as often these days. The 7 months since the breakup had given me distance and time to acknowledge my post-Oliver life. But this year had left me emotionally raw and bruised. No surprise, then, that my typically unshakable festive spirit had all but disappeared. As far as I was concerned, I wanted nothing to do with Christmas this time around. In fact, I was actively willing the season to pass. I heaved a sigh, trying to push away the heaviness in my heart.
but before I had time to step out of the car, my cell rang with Pink's treble, my personalized ringtone for Mom. It was something my sister had recently added, and it made me grin every time. Our mother could be a bit of a meddler on occasion, especially given my current situation. "Hi, Mom." I sank into my seat and tapped the speaker icon, aiming to inject the right amount of liveliness in my voice. Too much, and she'd ask what was wrong. Too little, and she'd be equally suspicious. "Callie, darling," Mom said, and I suppressed a sudden pang of homesickness as I imagined her standing in the kitchen of our family home in Pineville. She probably had the faded blue plastic receiver of her old 90s landline phone cradled in the crook of her neck, the long cord stretched out behind her. "How are you?" "Peachy keen, Jellybean." Whoops. Definitely too much sprightliness. My family knew I loved puns and funny expressions, but I'd never used that one in my life. "Mm-hmm." She filled the drawn-out sound with motherly skepticism. "Are you with your sister?" "No, in the car. I just got home. Anita asked me to get groceries. She was at the office this afternoon." "On a Saturday? She works far too much." Mom tutted, and I couldn't disagree. "Are you at least having fun? Seeing any friends tonight?" "Oh yeah, definitely," I said, omitting the fact that I didn't have many here, or that I suspected Anita had sent me on the food run, despite it being her turn, because she wanted me to interact with at least one other human before the weekend was over. "I see," Mom said, and when she clicked her tongue, it felt as if I'd walked into an expertly laid trap. "In that case, you aren't planning on plopping yourself on the sofa in your pajamas and reading until Monday morning, right?" Those were the exact words I'd muttered to Anita yesterday when she'd unsuccessfully tried to convince me to go out with her tonight. Traitor. She knew I wasn't in the mood, and it hadn't escaped me how Mom had bestowed her running interference gene on her eldest daughter, a fact my sister consistently denied. As I contemplated the best response to give my mother, the rich, meaty aroma from the box of spaghetti bolognese I'd picked up made my stomach rumble. There was no way I'd mention my takeout and jigsaw puzzle plans, or that I wouldn't need to change into my pajamas because they were already underneath my sweatpants. "Callie," Mom asked, "are you still there?" "Yeah, sorry." I refocused on our conversation and decided to fib. "I'm not sure what I'm doing tonight." "All right, dear. Then let's talk about Christmas. Have you given any more thought to coming home for the holidays with Anita?" "Mom, we've already discussed this. I can't." "You've never missed our Meyer Christmas Eve bash." She paused, seemingly choosing her next words with utmost care. "It won't be the same without you. And while I understand it wouldn't be easy with Oliver and his friend next door, you can't let them ruin your favorite holiday." "Oliver and his new girlfriend being there isn't the problem." "Mm-hmm," she said for a second time. "It isn't," I insisted, wishing it were true. Fact was, when I'd learned a few weeks ago that Oliver and his new squeeze, a bona fide goddess in the form of local TV reporter Sarah Barrett, would be in Pineville over Christmas, it had been the final nail in the going home for the holidays coffin. While the all-consuming, thick, and stifling breakup fog had mostly subsided, it didn't mean I'd fully recovered. What happened still hurt deeply, and at times I found myself not only wondering why our relationship had ended the way it did, but also how I'd been oblivious to the change in Oliver's feelings for me. Despite almost having accepted that he'd found someone else, I wasn't ready for any kind of celebrating, and going to Pineville for Christmas could only be a holiday disaster. First problem, Oliver's parents, Ursula and Quentin Hill, lived right next door to mine. I may have been within reach of getting over my ex, but I had no intention of subjecting myself to catching glimpses of his newfound bliss with Sarah, particularly when our families had always celebrated the holidays together. I couldn't remember a Christmas without the Hills being at our house, me completely smitten with Oliver since I was 5, or us at theirs, cooking turkey and yams, pulling crackers, and exchanging gifts galore. Fond memories full of love and laughter.
Ghosts of a happier past I didn't need reminders of.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?